One, two, Freddy's coming for you. Three, four, better lock your door. Five, six, grab your crucifix. Seven, eight, gonna stay up late. Nine, ten, never sleep again. A Nightmare on Elm Street, 1984. We all know Freddy Krueger. He of the dirty red and green sweater, the brown fedora on his head, the burned and scarred face, the rotten teeth, the green eyes, and of course, the glove. He stalked the dreams of teenagers on Elm Street, and if he found you, he'd kill you, effectively turning your dream into a nightmare. But that nightmare? It didn't end when you woke up in a cold sweat from running through your nightmare all night, because you didn't wake up. If Freddy Krueger killed you in your dream, you were dead for real. Which is crazy, right? But Freddy's success at the box office can really be attributed to one thing. We all have nightmares. We all know that feeling of sheer panic and fear that grips us immediately after waking from a nightmare. I'd say most of us have even dreamt of someone unknown chasing us, or even of just falling off a cliff. And we always wake up right before they catch us, or right before we fall. Freddy forced us to think, oh my God, what would happen if we didn't wake up in time? What if the monster and all of our nightmares actually did catch us? Freddy showed us just what would happen. We could all relate to this idea of dying in our nightmares so much more so than, say, an escaped psychiatric patient wielding a knife stalking babysitters on Halloween, or a crazed backwoods man wearing other people's skin as a mask, toting a chainsaw, or even a supernatural deformed man who always dies, then comes back to life and finds his way back to the lake where he was tormented and drowned as a kid. But this was 1984 Hollywood, certainly not reality. Freddy isn't real, we all know that. Sure, he's alive in the nightmares of a few million people, but not like actually real. He exists only in Wes Craven's mind, the pages of scripts, the reels of tape, and a few million DVDs. So why am I even talking about it on Within a Dream? Well, what if I told you that Wes Craven was inspired to create his Freddy Krueger based off of some old newspaper articles he read in the LA Times in the late 70s, early 80s. Articles with headlines like, Nightmare Syndrome, Deaths of Laos Refugees Puzzle Officials, and Night Deaths of Asian Men Unexplained. You see, something was happening to these Hmong refugees in their sleep, and they never woke up to talk about it. I'm Nikki Brooks, and welcome to Within a Dream. Wes Craven spoke often on his inspiration behind creating Freddy, and in a small documentary on the network Stars called Going to Pieces, The Rise and Fall of the Slasher Film, he said, quote, I had saved these clippings of a news story about some young men dying in the middle of severe nightmares. His father was a physician and had given him sleeping pills, and the kid supposedly was taking them. And they had come out of Southeast Asia war camp, so the family just assumed that he had been traumatized. And he said, no, it's different. There's something stalking me in my dreams, and I don't want to sleep. And he actually kept himself awake. But finally, he fell asleep, and the family carried him up to his bed and put him to bed. And the accounts afterward were, we were all relieved and felt like finally he can rest and sleep. And they went in their own beds and then heard him screaming and, you know, thrashing about. And they went into his room and he was screaming and kicking on his bed. But by the time they got to him, he just fell silent and he was dead. In his closet, they had found that there was a coffee pot that he had hidden in there with black coffee. And they found all these sleeping pills that he hadn't taken. And it was so dramatic, this guy knew he was going to die if he slept. And you have to sleep. According to an article from the LA Times from July of 1981, it began with a man named Lai Duya in 1977. He was a Hmong refugee. He died in his Orange County, California home. A county social worker who knew him was quoted as saying, "He was such an awesome example because he was so big and robust. And he had been a medic. He was at least sophisticated enough about health matters that he would have known if he was sick. There was an autopsy which put down the cause of death as acute cardiac insufficiency, which is a fancy way of saying they didn't know exactly what killed him. They even coined several terms for it, one being nightmare death. This unexplained death would turn into 20 over the next 4 years, 19 men and one woman, all of which were Hmong refugees. All went to bed one night, seemingly healthy, no illness or injuries, and died during their sleep. Some were found dead in their beds the next morning, but some were witnessed by family members to have been heard and seen making gurgling noises, thrashing about in their beds, and then they would collapse, dead. And in every single one of these cases, an autopsy was done, and it was unable to provide an adequate explanation for the deaths. Four of these deaths were reported in Orange County. An additional two were suspected. So let's say six. At the time, around 7,000 Hmong refugees were living in the area. This may not sound like much, insignificant really, but when taken with the fact that there were only 13 deaths among the Hmong people at that time, literally half of the deaths among their people were caused by these unexplained night deaths. Or, as many family members were beginning to believe, nightmare death. In Portland, another area with a substantial Hmong refugee population, four deaths were reported in 1 year, and all four of those deaths were unexplained. In the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, where the largest population of Hmong refugees at the time, some 10 to 12,000, six cases had been reported, and single cases had been reported in Seattle, Des Moines, Toledo, San Diego, Los Angeles, and Lawton, Oklahoma. It seemed the professional guesses were mostly culture shock. These Hmong refugees had been through so much in their lives and were from a war-torn country that adapting to a new life halfway across the globe from your home couldn't have been easy. They assumed this as stressful, which in turn could affect their overall health, which maybe, possibly, not really sure, but we'll run with it, could have attributed to their completely unexplained deaths at night while sleeping. Another theory was maybe they were having a very delayed reaction to the gas attacks that had been prevalent in their homeland during the war. But U.S. medical investigators said they hadn't been able to confirm it. None of the victims' families claimed any knowledge of the deceased having been gassed, as well as there wasn't any known toxic materials that could have, number one, delayed the reactions for as long as it did, and two, there was no signs of poisoning. So going back to Wes Craven's claim for inspiration behind Freddy, I wasn't able to find a newspaper article that described a young man refusing sleeping pills with a coffee pot hidden in his closet. But this was also in the late 70s and early 80s. A lot of newspaper articles from that time period never made it to the internet archives we rely heavily on today. And I'm nowhere near Orange County, so visiting a library to dig through films is out of the question. So I will take Craven at his word on this one because clearly he was dead on when it came to the heart of the mystery. Were nightmares really and truly killing these Hmong refugees? And who are the Hmong? And why was this only affecting them? The Hmong people descended from Southeast Asia, originally from China, but fled to Thailand, Vietnam, and Laos in the mid-19th century after being labeled barbarians by the Manchu dynasty. For those that fled to Laos, their struggle would continue. When the Vietnam War spread into Laos, their government recruited the Hmong people to fight the communist Lao troops. It's estimated that one-third of the Hmong people were wiped out entirely during this conflict. In 1975, there was a communist takeover in Laos, and roughly 100,000 Hmong people fled to seek asylum in Thailand. Those who remained in Laos were captured and put into re-education camps. Of those in Thailand, an estimated 3,500 Hmong were allowed into the United States in 1975, 11,000 more in 1976, and by 1978, the U.S. had an estimated 30,000 Hmong refugees. The Hmong culture is traditionally animist, meaning they believe in the spirit world and its interconnectedness to all living things. At its center lies the shaman, the father of spirits. They believe that the human body is host to a number of souls. If one soul is separated from its body, it can bring on disease, depression, and even death. A shaman would be called to assist in finding the lost soul and returning it to its rightful body. Only then can the person be whole again, free from the disease or depressive state it may be in. Dreams in Hmong culture are prophetic and largely symbolic, meaning if you dream of a snake, it doesn't mean a snake is going to bite you. It just means you're pregnant. Or if you dream about eating fruits and vegetables, it means you're going to have a little girl. If you dream that you are being shot and can feel the bullet pierce your skin, congratulations, it's a boy. But say you have a nightmare. To prevent the events in the dream from happening, you have to spit saliva into the toilet in the morning, along with your first morning's urine. You have to say out loud and address your dream itself by saying, "You stupid dream, I'm spitting you out and flushing you away, just as I have done with the waste from my body. Go away and do not return." Obviously, the Hmong are a very superstitious people, and their culture is filled with things like never whistle at night because it will attract ghosts, never fall at a funeral because the deceased spirit will follow you home and make you ill, children who have all of their baby teeth can see ghosts, it's bad luck to cut your hair at night, don't get married on an odd-numbered day, it will bring bad luck to your marriage, never call anyone's name out at night because someone else will answer you. And finally, when dreaming, if someone asks you to go with them, do not go because you will never wake up. The Hmong also believed in something called nocturnal pressing spirit attacks, or the night hag, or as I've always called it, old hag syndrome. In China, it's called begeya, which translates to crushed by ghost. The Dutch call it nachtmerrie, the actual origin of the word nightmare. The merrie comes from the Middle Dutch mare, who is an incubus, who lies on people's chests and suffocates them. In Indonesia, it's called digutan, which translates to pressed on. In science, they simply call it sleep paralysis. And for those of you that have ever experienced this, it is absolutely terrifying. It is a phenomenon in which a person who is in between the stages of awake and asleep feel the presence of something in the room with them. The presence or spirit then sits on the person's chest, making breathing difficult, and it completely paralyzes the person. And for this, the Hmong people needed a shaman for psychic protection from the malevolent spirits of their sleep. So when the Hmong were granted entry as refugees into the U.S. beginning in 1975, they naturally brought their culture and beliefs with them. However, most felt that they were not able to worship properly due to the guerrilla war against the government of Laos with the United States. And when unable to worship properly, their belief is that it leads the ancestor spirit unable and unwilling to protect them, therefore opening up the way for evil spirits to reach them. Once in the U.S., the Hmong people were spread out across 53 different cities across the country, which made it incredibly difficult to get a shaman to help protect them. Some believe that it is this, and this alone, that caused the nightmare deaths of so many. But what does science say? I found an article from the LA Times dated April 24th, 1988, a decade after the first reported death. And it says it still remains a mystery. In 1981 alone, that was the peak year for deaths. 26 Hmong men died in their sleep. And this piqued the interest of the Centers for Disease Control, and they began to track the phenomenon. The CDC was responsible for analyzing patterns of mysterious deaths that might point to the source and hopefully prevent an epidemic. Doctors, epidemiologists, and medical examiners all dove into this story, and really, they came up empty-handed. But they did coin a term, sudden unexpected nocturnal death syndrome, or SUNDS, S-U-N-D-S. Dr. Robert Kirshner was an associate professor of pathology at the University of Chicago at the time, and his curiosity got the better of him. He began a systematic study of the nightmare deaths. He was also deputy Cook County medical examiner at the time, and as such, he investigated five of the nightmare deaths himself. One case in particular involved a Laotian father and his son, who died in their Chicago apartment, in bed and asleep, only 15 months apart. He discovered that the victims had some things in common. Most notably, they had absolutely nothing wrong with them before they suddenly died. It occurs mostly in men, and it occurs in their sleep. And all reports are either that the victim cries out in their sleep and suddenly dies, or they are found dead the next morning. The only thing of note in most of the autopsy reports was that the heart just suddenly stopped. But this explanation didn't satisfy another doctor, Dr. Frederick Eckner of the University of Illinois College of Medicine. He performed detailed examinations of 18 of the victims' hearts. And what he found was that all 18 were slightly enlarged, and 17 of the 18 showed defects in their conduction systems. And the conduction systems consists of an array of fibers that carries electronic impulses from the brain to the heart. He found that these fibers were frayed and curled, as if their hearts just shorted out. Dr. Kirshner's theory is that something at night, during sleep, like a random electronic discharge, and yep, that could be a nightmare, overloaded these already slightly defective hearts and caused their sudden deaths. He speculated that genetics probably played a role in the defect. He also attributed stress as a factor, stating that most of these deaths occurred within the first 2 years of the refugees living in the U.S., and perhaps the stress of adapting to a new culture played a part. After all, by 1987, the phenomenon dropped significantly to where it almost seemed to disappear. But it wasn't just the Hmong in the U.S. either. Between 1982 and 1990, it's estimated that 230 people died in Singapore. In Tokyo alone, it was reported that every year, several hundred men were found dead in their beds. Filipinos, Chinese immigrants in the Philippines, Japanese, and natives of Guam all reported nightmare deaths. Then, in 1992, three cardiologist brothers in Italy, Joseph, Pedro, and Ramon Brugada, discovered something. An abnormality on an electrocardiogram, or ECG, that was known to cause ventricular fibrillation, a lethal arrhythmia of the heart. This, they considered a warning sign. Without getting too heavy into your college A&P course, let's just say that it was discovered that this abnormality, they believed, could be the prime explanation for the Humong nightmare deaths in the U.S. and across Asia. For treatment, they would surgically implant a defibrillator that would detect the abnormality, and once detected, it would shock the heart and send it into its normal rhythm again. This abnormality is now referred to as Brugada syndrome. But really, science doesn't explain the why. Why, all of a sudden, would this apparent defect of the heart show up in so much of the Humong refugees? Within a short time period, and for only a short while. The why, then, remains a mystery. Freddy Krueger remains one of the greatest horror film icons of all time, not counting his cheesy one-liners and his sadistic attempt at humor that he adapted in the later films, and let's just throw out the second film altogether. But at the core, Freddy is utterly terrifying. The bastard son of 100 maniacs who grew up to murder 20 children before meeting his demise at the hands of the parents of his slain victims who torched his house and burned him alive. Upon his death, he makes a deal with nightmare demons who grant him life inside nightmares. It's the souls of his continued victims that fuels his power to carry on, film after film, death after death. To me, he sounds strikingly similar to some of the Humong people's beliefs. As a child, I lived at the bottom of two hills. Behind our house, there was a large gully stretching through town that diverted rainwater to the river. A block down from my house, the gully became a tunnel, a long, pitch-black concrete tunnel that went under the streets of town and led all the way to the riverbed. It was here, in this tunnel, where Freddy lived. In my childhood dreams, of course. Over the years, I had a total of 5 different dreams about Freddy and his house in this tunnel, and they would reoccur from time to time. You see, in the middle of the tunnel, there was this secret door on the wall, and that door led to his house. In one of these dreams, I'm a teenager of around 17, which is a good 5 years older than my actual age at the time. The dream always starts the same. I'm standing in my backyard, looking down into the gully. Freddy is watching me from the bottom. He doesn't speak, he just motions me to follow. Transfixed, I follow. The gully is always bone dry with crunchy fallen leaves underfoot. That is, until I reach the tunnel. Freddy glances back at me, a crooked smile on his face, and motions me to follow him inside the tunnel. And then he disappears inside. I stop at the opening, peering inside, trying to see him. It is as black as a moonless night inside. A slow trickle of water begins to flow down the concrete walls of the gully and soon begins to pool at my feet. The water is dirty and cold, filled with decomposing leaves and twigs. It snaps me out of my trance. I look at my surroundings, gather my bearings, and continue into the tunnel. The light from the entrance quickly disappears as I continue walking. It seems I walk for years until finally, in the distance, I spot a dull orange glow. Once I reach the light, I discover that it's hanging above a door on the wall of the tunnel. I open the door and find myself in his house. It's a large living room with minimal furniture and a rather large fish tank. I scan the room, but there's no Freddy. I slowly walk toward the fish tank, curious about the odd-looking creature that is inside. Suddenly, there's a touch on my shoulder, and I see his four distinct knives from his glove come around the front and rest themselves on my collarbone. Freddy whispers in my ear to join him. And me, being all of 17 and apparently a professional kickboxer, spin around and a fight begins. We struggle. I get in a few good kicks when he suddenly stops. He puts one knife in front of his mouth as if to tell me to be quiet. He looks up at the ceiling and starts this loud, maniacal laughter. I look up at the ceiling myself and I scream, but then I wake up. To this day, after having this dream probably a dozen times over the years, I have no idea what's on the ceiling. And that does it for episode 3 of Within a Dream. Keep sending me your dreams at dreams@withinadreampod.com. Check out the website at www.withinadreampod.com, and there you can find links to our Twitter and Facebook pages, along with past episodes. If you enjoy the show, you can let me know by leaving a review on iTunes. Reviews are essential in keeping the podcast alive. Within a Dream is written and produced by yours truly, Nikki Brooks, mixing and music by Aaron Brooks. Thank you so much for listening, and until next time, sleep well.